Hello and welcome to On Boards, a deep look at driving business success. Hi, I'm Joe Ayoub, and I'm here with my co-host, Raza Sheikh. How are you doing today, Raza?
I'm doing well. Good to be with you, Joe.
Good to be with you, Raza, virtually. First, to our listeners. For those of you listening during the COVID-19 crisis, and many of us in the United States are restricted in what we can do and where we can go, and we're all trying to understand how to best conduct ourselves, we hope you're all taking precautions to stay safe. On Boards podcast is about boards of directors and advisors and all aspects of board governance. Twice a month, this is the place to learn about one of the most critically important aspects of any company or organization, its board of directors or advisors.
Joe and I speak with guests about a wide range of topics relating to boards, what makes them successful or unsuccessful, and how to make your board one of the most valuable assets of your company.
Today's episode is focused on the role that boards are playing during the coronavirus crisis and how that role is changing. And we have a slightly different format today. We've invited three guests instead of one to help give a broad perspective on the changing role of boards during this crisis. On our panel today are Jay Lorsch, a distinguished professor at Harvard Business School. For the past 25 years, he has specialized on the functioning and operations of corporate boards and is widely recognized as a leading expert on the subject. Jay, it's good to have you with us. How are you?
Thank you very much.
We have Rick Williams as our guest today, who is the managing director of Williams Advisory Partners. He has a breadth of experience as an executive and board director for technology companies, including medical technology, software, and financial services. Rick's soon-to-be-published book entitled Create the Future for Your Company and Yourself is a how-to field guide for leaders who want to think creatively about where to take their organization. Welcome, Rick.
Thanks, Raza. Glad to be here.
And Ellen Richstone. She is a former Fortune 500 CFO and a former private company CEO. She has sat on public company boards for over 15 years and is currently sitting on the boards of three public companies, one in the technology sector, industrial sector, and clean tech. She also sits on the board of the NACD of New England, is an NACD board leadership fellow, and received the first Distinguished Director Award from the Association of Corporate Directors. Ellen, welcome to On Boards.
Joe, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So Ellen, let me start with you. You're sitting on the boards of three public companies, each in very different sectors. What conversations are you currently having at the board level?
Thank you, Joe. The conversations really fall into three buckets: the immediate, the medium term, and the long term, but they really divide into four different areas. The first is employees, the second, communication, the third, financial, and the fourth, business. Let me go back to each one of them. The first, employees and people. Clearly, number one is the focus on employee health and employee safety. The takeaway I would give on this area is the need to balance empathy, safety, and yet execute where execution is still critically needed. The third item within people and employees is succession planning. It's being done very differently than the way we traditionally have done it at the board level, given that you need to really dive down into many levels, which the board doesn't usually do. And the reason we have to do that is because as people get sick, you need to make sure that the critical areas are covered. The second area is communications. There is a demand for increased communications with all parties, promptly, clearly, with increased transparency. And this is all stakeholders, employees, customers, supply chain, and of course, shareholders. The third area we focus on is financial. Number one is cash is king, so the focus on liquidity is absolutely paramount. The second is a scenario planning, which also is part of the business, but in the scenario planning within financial, it's the, I'll call it pair and protect, or two, ride out the storm. The third is, don't forget about your internal controls, because as we all come out of this, we don't want to create a different set of problems as we come out. The fourth is the business area. And this I divide into four different areas. One, which is of course supply chain. Are there any broken links? What can be done today? And how is this impacted as we go forward? Two, customers. All of my companies are having increased communication, interface, actions with the customers. Three, are there short or long-term opportunities? My three companies are in very different areas. One is in an area that's being decimated, one which is in an area which is having opportunities because of this crisis, and the third is one which has been declared a national. They're not allowed to shut down because of their status supplying the military. So very different scenarios. And in some cases, there are opportunities that are coming out of this new paradigm shifting business situation, which takes us into the last category, which we can't forget, which is strategy. How does all of this change our long-term strategy or not? What pivots should we be making within our strategy for the long term? And with that, I would turn it back to you, Joe.
Thank you, Ellen. Rick, would you like to follow up on that?
Well, first of all, Ellen has just given a really superb overview of what the boards need to be doing at this point. And I actually was just going to add and build on a little bit what Ellen said. Ellen emphasized communication as an important element. One of the things I think the board can contribute to in these situations is a very important conversation about what should the board and the company be communicating. So Ellen mentioned that she is on the board of companies in three different sectors, one that's been severely impacted, one that's a critical industry, and another that may have opportunities coming out of this. So what is the message that the company should be communicating to its employees, to its customers, and to shareholders? And it's not the same in each. And I think part of that messaging has to be realism about what's the challenge facing the company, a message of brutal honesty in a real crisis as to what actually is going on and what the threats are, and also a message of hope, and I would say bounded hope about within the bounds of reality. So what is the vision for how we're going to get through this is part of the message I think has to come out of this.
Raza, has there ever been a time when honest, authentic communication has been more important for a company?
I can't imagine, Joe, and our recent guest, Joe Berlin, also emphasized and provided playbooks on how what really matters is the authenticity and trust of the messages and messaging in this world.
I'd like to bring Jay into the conversation, if I can, with this question. Wouldn't it be good practice for private company boards to follow the same structure as public company boards? That is that every board, public or private, should have either an independent chair or an outside lead director.
Yeah, I think that's right. I would agree with you. And I think the problem, however, is that in private company boards, the term really defines the difficulty, which is in a private company board, the people who are the shareholders are actually on the board. And therefore, you get into this complicated situation about who's really leading the company. At the end of the day, in my experience, when you've got private shareholders, whether they be a set of venture capital firms or a family, they have immense influence because, in a sense, it is their company. And that's different from a public company where the shareholders are represented by the board, and the board's responsibility is to speak for the shareholders and to oversee management on behalf of the shareholders, as well as any other constituents that you've got involved. So I think it's very, very important to have leadership and to recognize that one of the board's primary duties is to make sure that leadership is in place and that it's functioning effectively, not only with the board, but with management. I mean, I think that's the trick of being a lead director or a chairman, is to figure out how to build a relationship with management through the CEO and how to maintain cohesion within the board so that the two groups, that is management and the board, can work in a collaborative way for the good of the shareholders, for the good of the company.
Thanks, Jay. Rick, I wanted to go to you with a question that you raised actually for Ellen, which is, how does the relationship between the board and management change in a crisis? And what's different in this crisis?
Okay, Joe. Boy, this is an interesting conversation already. So I think it's great and I'm learning myself. First of all, let's just drop back to kind of what is the role of the board versus the role of management. I think it's just worth restating that every so often because I think we lose track of that sometimes. So the management of the company is in charge of running the company, not the board of directors. And as Jay just mentioned, that's a difficult separation to keep often with private companies, but it is the distinction that should be in place. The board's role is as an advisor, a coach, a resource, a representative of overall management in terms of the supervision of the company. That's the board's role. It's not to run the company. So if you look at what's happening in a crisis like this, the management is the one who has to deal with the immediate crisis. And the board has to provide its supervision, but stay out of the way of management as it's running the company. And I think there are a number of differences between the normal relationship between the board and the management and the board's role in a crisis. And among them being that, frankly, a lot of leaders today of companies may never have been through a crisis of this magnitude. And hopefully there are people on the board who have and can provide some guidance as to, okay, how do you make decisions? What are the issues you have to think about? All the sorts of things that Ellen mentioned before. So the board also, the leadership, often is thinking about what are the issues I have to deal with today? What do I have to do today, and I don't have time to think about 6 months from now, a year from now, 5 years from now. And usually those are domains that often the board has more of a role in. But even in the cases where the management has to be thinking about the immediate, the future can be what's going to happen a month from now, what's going to happen 2 months from now. And the board often will have the time to think about that a month from now and 2 months from now, questions that the management may not have time to in the same way. We're not thinking about 5 years from now, but are you really thinking about what's going to happen 2 months from now? Who are the suppliers going to be? Are you going to have cash? Are we going to be able to stay in operation? Or this immediate surge in demand that we have, is that going to be here 2 months from now or 6 months from now? I also think that one of the things that the board needs to be think very carefully about is the relationship that they have between each other. And Jay talked about this a little bit, what happens if you don't have a good relationship? Well, whether you have a good relationship between management and the board is or not, in a moment of crisis, both management and the board have to think consciously about maintaining that relationship, maintaining trust, and maintaining open communications. And it's communication with management and the board so that the board knows what's going on and also has enough information so we can get its work done. And also that the board is not putting demands on management for communication that management doesn't really have time to provide, and it's really not essential for the board at this moment.
Let me ask you, Rick, a follow-up question. Sure. As much as boards may want to help, don't they have to be especially careful now not to grab the wheel, so to speak, and veer into management?
Oh, absolutely. There are certainly instances in which the board has to be, in effect, imposing or making a decision. But really, the more valuable, usually, role of the board is to help the management think about process. What is the process you have set up to deal with this crisis? How are you going to make decisions through this crisis?
Ellen, did you want to follow up on that?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk for a moment about how the board and the management communicate, because I think every board led by the chair, the independent lead director, and management need to figure out the frequency and the amount of communication that's needed between them. I did some thought processing and it came down to 3 points. With my boards right now, my public boards, it comes down to the CEOs give email updates about every other week. It includes information on company specific, and it may touch on something that has just happened in the industry. So that's bullet one. Obviously, if there is a crisis or some huge change, it's more frequent, but the pattern is every other week communication by email. Second, if the boards do calls regularly. Normally, you don't meet that often on a phone call, virtually or in person, in between standard board meetings. But each of my boards have set up regular calls, one which is biweekly, and two of my boards are on a monthly cycle, so that there can be live communication. Again, it increases if something immediate has happened, but otherwise we have a standard routine and each board has to figure out what its routine is, with email communications coming out from the CEO so that the board can maintain an appropriate distance, oversight, yes, appropriate noses in, fingers out, and make sure that they're doing the right things, but not interfering or preventing or taking time away from what management needs to be spending their time doing.
That's great, Ellen. Thank you. So Jay, let me follow up something that Rick said and ask you about situations. Actually, you and I have talked about this previously, that in situations where the relationship between the board and the CEO, senior management, has not been strong. For example, there's been a lack of transparency or a lack of trust. What can a board do now in order to handle that challenge or manage that challenge?
Well, it's always a challenge when the board and the CEO don't trust each other, or particularly when the board is losing confidence in its leadership of the company. I think in a situation like we're now in, most boards would prefer to avoid that kind of problem. Yet, I think if there's a lack of trust between the senior manager, the CEO, and the board's leadership, I think you've got to fix it. And I think even though you're in the middle of a crisis, it's probably even more urgent not to let it fester. The board is really fundamentally got to worry about more than anything else is the quality of the leadership of the company. And if they're losing confidence in that person, the CEO, I think they've got to figure out how to fix it. There's two ways to fix it. One is to have the kinds of conversations with the CEO, which might rebuild their mutual confidence to each other, or to make the decision that, as bad as that is and as dangerous, as difficult as it is at this moment, if you don't have the kind of leadership you want, you better fix the problem by finding a new leader, either from within the organization or by looking outside. And I'm not suggesting that's an easy thing to do, but I think trying to run a company where the board doesn't have confidence in the management, particularly the job manager, the CEO, in the kinds of crisis we now face, is really fundamentally impossible. And it's gonna come down at some point soon, trying to change that leadership. And I think the sooner you address that problem, the safer the company is going to be.
Jay, what about the idea of boards having board-only executive sessions to at least talk among themselves and think about how they can address problems that they may having with the CEO and how they can at least deal with that in the short term? The longer term may be a change in management, but this is, as you suggested, not a good time for that.
Yeah.
How does the board get itself on the same page?
Well, let me say, first of all, the analogy I would use is it's like trying to change leadership when you're leading the army through a stream. You don't want to try to do that. But the other point I want to make is that I guess I was assuming that the board regularly has these kinds of what we call, for some strange reason, executive sessions, meaning when there's sessions with no executives in it. I've never understood how we came to that terminology. But the point is, I think every board needs to have, at least at the time of regular board meetings, a session with just the independent directors alone, without the CEO, and trying to figure out where they are as a group. The reality is there are some things directors need to talk to each other about. They don't want the CEO there. And you've got to have those sessions. And I've always believed that, for the last decade, most boards have had those sessions regularly at the time of each, before or after, or maybe even before and after each of the regular board meetings. A board can't be effective if the directors themselves don't know how to talk to each other and can't be honest with each other. And I think that's important to emphasize. There's a lot of people who keep talking about the relationship between the CEO and the board and the relationship between the board and other managers in the company. That certainly is important, but I think equally important is the relationship among the directors. I didn't mention this in the introduction, but I've been on about 6 public company boards myself and a number of private boards. And I would say that if the boards that I was on weren't really in tune with each other, didn't understand each other, didn't trust each other, didn't have common goals, they couldn't do a very good job. And the only way you get that kind of commonality and shared objectives is by having these kinds of quote executive sessions, so the directors know where they're headed.
Thank you. Alan, would you like to follow that up?
Well, all I will say is, Jay, I agree with you 100%. Executive sessions, even before this time, were standard practice with at least public company boards. And all of mine have always done executive sessions. But I think this situation we're all going through now just underscored the fact that if you hadn't been doing executive sessions and if your board had not been talking to each other on a regular basis without anyone else in the room, if you aren't able to communicate between yourselves as board members, then frankly, it's a lot more difficult in situations like this, a lot more difficult. So I would just emphasize, if you aren't already doing them, please do them. If you are doing them, leave plenty of time. And what the best practice that one of my boards uses and the others have started is at the end of a session and when the board is all together, and it could be virtually all together, the board chair or lead independent director, who's ever running the board, will go around to each director, nobody's left off the hook, and ask them 2 questions. 1, how did they feel about the conversations we had? And 2, what are their biggest concerns? And he gets all of that input from each of the directors, and then we have a discussion. And it is, over time, it builds the kind of rapport and discussion that you need to have between directors.
Ellen and Jay, great comments. Rick, would you like to follow up on that too?
Well, I'm hesitant to follow up after Jay and Ellen, but most of my experience has been with private boards In fact, I'll say all of my experience has been with private boards. And I've been in so many situations in which the board meeting really didn't happen until the executive session started. And it's really so very important. And what Ellen said about allowing time as opposed to, oh, let's have a quick, you know, 5 minutes, does anybody have anything to say? You've got to schedule the time. I was also going to raise one other element to this, building on Jay's comment about the directors getting to know each other and what their agendas are. That let me just put on the table the case where you have members of the family or part of a board of directors, or you might have a private equity representative on the board or venture capital representatives on the board. You know, board members are not homogeneous, just sort of everybody gets together and works. The reason they're on the board will be quite different in most cases, and the interests they represent and their own motivations for their being on the board will be quite different. And as a result of that, it's often difficult to get the board members who may not personally know each other that well, it's difficult to get them to work together as a cohesive group, advising management, reviewing management practices, all that sort of thing. So what Jay said about having the board members spend time getting to know each other, getting on the same page with each other, is extremely important to have the board be more than just a functionary that's sort of doing a role but not really making a contribution. And sometimes it doesn't work perfectly. In fact, I would say it seldom works perfectly. But the importance of getting to know each other and finding common ground that the board can work with, collaborate, is absolutely essential to the board being an important contributor.
I will say one thing. I thought all the comments are great. I too have always wondered why a session with only board members is called the executive session. I'm glad you said that, Jay, because I have no idea where that comes from.
I know.
But this may sound strange, but I think in many respects, public company boards are easier to build and make effective than the venture capital board or a family company.
Yes, I agree.
The reason being that there are very strong emotional interests in those two situations. And, you know, I've been on both, and I'll tell you, it's much easier to build an understanding and common purpose among public company directors than it is in a family where Uncle Joe doesn't agree with his brother. And then particularly in these venture capital boards, I think the boards that are dominated by venture capital representatives often are the most dysfunctional boards you can find, because the idea for a board is to represent the shareholders. The problem is when the shareholders are on the board, they get into arguments with each other, and it's very, very hard for them to put the interests of the company ahead of their own parochial interests. And so I think in a crisis situation like this, I'd rather be on a public company board than I would be on some of these family boards, and particularly on the venture capital boards.
For the venture capital board, I completely agree, Jay. When the preference stack and the capital waterfall is so stark, even though as board member everybody is beholden to the shareholders, it does create a lot of tension between the Series A board versus the Series B board member.
Right.
So Rosa, let me follow up with you, and then I'm going to ask everyone maybe to comment on this last question, which is, how have the role of boards changed in this crisis, and what is it likely to mean for the future, to the extent we can really see that?
Joe, the first thing I'm observing, as everybody has pointed out, that boards are changing towards more frequent communication in all ways. The second thing I observe is it almost for every single board, it is an all hands on deck situation. The third thing I note that there always was a line between, you know, management and board guidance, but that line is certainly shifting more towards hands-on. They're not touching the wheel, but they're almost, or maybe in some cases they are. There is a tremendous amount of realization also at board levels that this is not really a short-term crisis. This is here for the long, and they got to adopt for that. The one very important thing that I see that all boards are now in a problem-solving mode, whether it's how do we get cash in the bank or how to apply for the PPP and if I need to change my charter documents to be able to do that. But basically, in all respects, boards are squarely in a problem-solving mode. And I would say the last thing, probably the tactical, that a lot of boards have gotten now familiar or used to what is Zoom and what is WebEx and how to conduct board meetings virtually.
Alan, do you want to follow up? And if you would, a few words on what it might mean for the future too.
Joe, thank you very much. That's exactly where I was going to go. What is it likely to mean for the future and the role of the boards? And I think I do it in four bullets. One, boards need to understand the world has really changed. Two, planning for a crisis is not a luxury. And when I say planning for a crisis, I'm talking about everything from boards would always talk about doing enterprise risk management. Well, enterprise risk management, this just underscores the criticality of that whole effort and the need to be able to understand that crises happen. Three, crises will continue. I don't care whether we talk about a climate change issue, a tornado. I hate to think about 9/11, but it's happened once, the pandemic, forest fires, look at California. Think about the cybersecurity issues that some companies, particularly in financial services and in retail, have gone through. So crises will continue to come, and they're coming at a faster pace. And four, build resiliency. Think it's a core need on a go-forward basis at all levels of the corporation. It starts with the board. How does a company build resiliency as they come and go through these variety of crises that will attach itself to many different industries on a go-forward basis?
Great stuff to think about, Ellen. Really, really, thank you. Rick, do you want to add something to that as well, please?
Yeah, just a couple of comments. I mean, first of all, I think human nature is not going to change, and we are not going to be able to predict what the next crisis is going to be. So the next time there is a major crisis, we're going to go through the same process of not really understanding what the nature of the crisis is, not understanding what we should really do, and having to go through a process of make decisions, try, make mistakes, learn, adjust, and move on. In addition to what Ellen said, which I thought is very on target, I think that we're also going to rethink the reliance that we have, all companies have, on our supply chains and critical resources. And are they exposed to getting cut off in the kind of crisis that might happen over time? I think this whole notion of our economies are set up to find absolutely the lowest cost source of production is being challenged. I mean, that is sort of the international business system that we've set up, which I think all of us would agree ideally is what we should be doing. But in recognizing the implications of that in a moment like this, where certain supplies are going to be unreliable for whatever reason, I think that's going to be a question that we're all going to face as we go forward in whatever business we're in.
Thanks, Rick. Jade, do you have some final comments?
Yeah, I don't know what it'll tell us about the future, but I assume the future will continue to have crises, hopefully not as serious as the one we now contribute face. But I think the point I would make here is that the board were never created to deal with crises. That wasn't the idea. But the fact of the matter is, in today's world, boards have to be ready to move in and deal with a crisis, whether the crisis is externally generated like this one is, or whether it's a CEO who suddenly has a heart attack or decides he wants to quit. You know, there's all kinds of crises out there. And I think the board has to be a part of the organization which is really very, very good at crisis management. And I think that really goes back to the leadership of the board. The boards that I've had experience with dealing with big crises have always had, first of all, a small number of perhaps the leaders of the board, not the leader, but people who are high status members of the board who've been around a while, who take the resolution of the crisis very, very seriously. That's one thing you need. The second thing you need is a leader, not the CEO. The CEO's got plenty of problems to deal with, but you need a leader of the board, whatever title you use for him, chairman or lead director, who takes the resolution of the crisis and the management of the board seriously. There's no time in my experience where that kind of leadership becomes more important, because a board in a crisis without that kind of leadership and that kind of guidance can go off in too many, you know, different directions. And I think that the importance of the leader of the board, whatever title you give him or her, becomes fundamentally important in these crises. And we need to keep our eye, recognize the kind of effort these people have to put in to make the company successful. And making the company successful obviously means making the board successful.
Thank you. Alan, Jay, and Rick, it's been great speaking with you all. Thanks so much for joining us today. I hope you and your families will continue to be well and, of course, stay safe. I look forward to when we can be meeting in person again. And to our listeners, thank you all for listening to On Boards with our special guests, Ellen Richstone, Jay Lorsch, and Rick Williams. Please stay safe, take care of yourselves, your families, and your communities as best you can. Raza, please take care. I hope you and your family continue to stay safe.
Yes, Joe, we're all staying safe, and thank you, and I hope you and your family stay safe as well.
Thanks.